May it please the court, my name is Stephanie Ballard, and I'm representing Don Harmon, the appellant in this matter. With the court's permission, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Very well, then. The light will change to yellow when you're into your reserve time.
Thank you, Your Honor. On January 13, 2011, after a four-day jury trial, a Superior Court jury found that the State Harness Racing Commission had made a promise to reinstate suspended Judge Don Harmon's employment upon his being found not guilty of certain criminal charges. And that when that promise was breached, the jury found that Mr. Harmon suffered reliance damages as a result. It's our contention that the Superior Court erred by its November 17, 2011 post-trial decision, first, by granting the state's renewed 50B motion for judgment as a matter of law, and secondly, granting the state's alternative motion for a new trial. So Mr. Harmon is going to respectfully request at the conclusion of the argument that this court reverse the Superior Court decision and reinstate the jury's original verdict in full. What permeates the trial court's decision is that the trial court failed to accord due deference to the findings of the jury, and this was a highly fact-specific case. The jury had substantial evidence in the record from which it could have found both actual authority or apparent authority sufficient to constitute promissory estoppel, and given that the jury had the sole authority to resolve any conflicts in the testimony. As to actual authority, the most important testimony you have on that issue is at Appellant's Appendix at pages A69 to 71. And there, John Wayne, the Commissioner's Administrator of Racing, testified that he was told in executive session by members of the Commission that Don Harmon would be reinstated if he was found not guilty. He said,
"Now, did Mr. Wayne have the actual authority to hire or to reinstate on his own?"
He did not have the authority to hire and fire. However, Mr. Harmon was never terminated. Mr. Harmon was in a suspension status, and Mr. Wayne was Mr. Harmon's designated point of contact during his suspension as to all matters pertaining to the commission. So I would take the position that Mr. Wayne had the actual authority to convey to Mr. Harmon terms of suspension, which was what this was. The testimony was from Mr. Wayne, "I remember asking the question. I said, if Don Harmon is acquitted of all charges, does he get his job back? And that was what he," meaning Mr. Harmon, "wanted to be assured of. And I think I remember the commissioners looking at each other at the board and said, yes." He goes on to testify that this specific information was what he conveyed to Mr. Harmon. "I had assured Mr. Harmon," I said,
"now,
that..."
And just so I understand, in the brief, the way it was stated in the brief was there's an executive session, everyone's there, and the chairperson presents this question to the commission, and the commissioners nodded, and then the chairperson said on the record, yes. Is that what the record shows?
I believe when Mr. Harmon says, "and they all looked at each other and said yes," I do believe he's referring to the chairperson's using the word yes, but to be an executive session, there had to be a quorum. He made it clear, he posed the question to the commissioners, that they looked at each other, all manifested assent, and said yes.
So to the extent that any commissioner or the chair denied that, the jury resolved that as a factual matter in favor of your client?
That would be correct, yes.
And in your mind, that counts as a vote of the commission?
Your Honor, that counts as official action of the commission. I know the state relies heavily on Section 10,006, and they call it a vote requirement, but it isn't a vote requirement per se. It's a quorum requirement. It doesn't use the word vote. It doesn't say agenda. It doesn't say minutes. It says a quorum of the commission is necessary to take official action, and that's what we had here.
But how do we know a quorum of the commission took official action? We know a quorum was there, but is there anything in the record that recites how many voted yes, if that's what they did, or assented? Isn't it two? Isn't that what's in the record?
He did have some conflicting testimony. There were three depositions taken of Mr. Wayne and his courtroom testimony.
Well, what's the best evidence in the courtroom testimony?
Best evidence in the courtroom testimony, I would say at least the fair implication is that all commissioners present, because he said they looked at each other, the board, I think he means the commission, and said yes. Or at least that no one manifested any opposition.
And to the extent there were other positions, as Justice Ridgely's question indicated, the jury resolved it in favor of your client.
That would be correct. And that was the jury's sole province. It wasn't for the trial judge to reassess that credibility, and he didn't in the decision, but it wouldn't be for the trial judge. I think it's important to note the language at page A70. He said, and that was what he wanted to be assured of. He said, the reason I posed this question to the commission is because Mr. Harmon had come to me and said, I'm innocent. I know I'm going to be acquitted. I want to know what's going on with my job. Can you ask them? I'm paraphrasing. But he told the commission he wants to know, and what can I tell him? So not only did they make their representation, but they knew he was going to carry it back to Mr. Harmon. So that's further evidence of actual authority. And I'd also direct you to Restatement Section 3.01, which is actual authority as defined in Section 2.01 is created by a principal's manifestation to an agent that expresses the principal's assent that the agent take action. So what can I tell Mr. Harmon? You can tell him this, and that's, well, the evidence.
Then basically your argument is one of actual express authority.
I think
not apparent authority, which is just holding out someone as an agent.
I think there is sufficient evidence in the record to support a jury's finding on actual authority. In the alternative, there would also be sufficient evidence in the record to support a finding of apparent authority.
Just trying to narrow exactly which area of the law we're in. There are really three kinds of authority. There's actual express authority. There's actual implied authority, where nobody, tells the purported agent that he has authority, but it's implicit in the nature of the job. And then there's apparent authority, which is no authority at all.
And in fact, the other type of authority here was probably more akin, Your Honor, to the second type because of John Wayne's position as administrator of racing and his history of dealing with Mr. Harmon. He was, for all intents and purposes, the commission. Whenever Don had an issue, that's who he dealt with on personnel
matters. Well, I had the impression, tell me if I'm wrong, that we're not in the area of implied authority, because without the commission members, in effect, telling Mr. Wayne that he could go back to Mr. Harmon and give him the answer, he wouldn't have had.
You're correct, Your Honor. It wouldn't be within the scope of his authority to make that decision on his own.
Okay. So the basis for this appeal is that there was adequate evidence before the jury to enable the jury to find actual express authority.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the Superior Court later concluded that you couldn't invoke the doctrine of promissory estoppel against the state.
It did. And as I was reviewing this case, in some ways, the question came to mind whether that was properly before the court, because the doctrine of promissory estoppel, based on these relatively conceded facts, survived a motion to dismiss, a motion for summary judgment, and the initial Rule 50 motion. It got submitted to the jury, so at least at that point, the trial judge wasn't saying, as a matter of law, no matter what the evidence is, there can't be promissory estoppel against the state. And none of that was cross-appealed. Even if it is before the court, we would suggest on the facts of this case, it's incorrectly asserted, because promissory estoppel has been enforced against government agencies and actors in cases such as Keating and Crisco. And I think the court erred in saying that this case was more akin to the Alcohol Beverage Commission or the parole issue. I mean, those were clearly the essence of government, taxation, enforcing the law, not selling to minors, and parole and duration of imprisonment, clear government functions. This is only the terms of suspension for a suspended employee. It's not about conducting race meets. It doesn't go to the essence of what they are doing to serve the public.
Well, isn't the integrity of a judge and the reputation of a judge of harness racing integral to what the commission does? That is, the promise here, if it was made, would seem to be, despite whatever we find out in the course of the criminal investigation and criminal trial, if you're acquitted for whatever reason, you get to be the chief judge again. And doesn't that go to the core function of what the commission has to do when it decides who is going to act as a judge for harness racing?
Your Honor, I think that point would be well taken if Mr. Harmon was seeking specific performance. That might offend public policy. If he was saying, you have to put me back as presiding judge, and they're saying, we don't think you're appropriate. That's not what he's saying, but it doesn't take away from the fact that a promise was made, and he relied on it to his detriment.
But what does a promise to reinstate someone who is an at-will employee paid per diem on race days mean? What was the commission binding itself to, in your view? If they hired him back for one race, would they have satisfied whatever promise they made?
That's a good question. I'm not sure they thought it through in their mind.
I'm asking what the reasonable belief of Mr. Harmon had to be for him to forego the opportunities he says he forewent in order to reclaim this at-will per diem job.
Well, his belief, as he testified, was he would reclaim his job. I think he also believed he'd get back wages. That's another question, and we're not seeking it. But he had been with the Harness Racing Commission since, I believe, 1999 for about 5 years, and although he testified he had a November-to-November contract, it was continually renewed.
Well, let me ask it a different way. What could he reasonably expect had been promised him beyond a single race or some minimal reinstatement? Wouldn't he then become an at-will employee again, subject to being discharged?
I think he would, Your Honor. But his detrimental reliance was the forbearance. I'm going to get my job back in Delaware. And, yes, he knew he's still at-will.
But it had to be a reason. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry. It had to be a reasonable detrimental reliance, correct?
That's correct. However, I would say his term of 5 years of just continual renewal, when he never even went before the commission, it just all went through Mr. Wayne, gave him good reason to believe, and specifically that promise they made and making the other judge only an acting judge, that I'm going to go right back into my seat when I'm acquitted. I know I'm going to be acquitted, and I'm going to go right back to my job. I think that was reasonable for the jury to assume that was his reliance.
Does the record reflect, and I'm sorry to ask so many questions, but does the record reflect what the commission has to do when it makes an official decision, an executive session? Is there some way that's recorded?
There are minutes kept of the executive sessions. They were not put into evidence. The chairperson testified about the minutes, but they weren't before the jury. So, yes, there are minutes of an executive session. Having not seen those, I can't say what they routinely look like. Would it be good form to put everything in the minutes? Yes, it would. Does it undo the fact that official action by a quorum was taken? No.
I think that, the questions that Vice Chancellor Glasscock was asking go, not to the narrow question of authority, but to the broader question of whether there was an enforceable contract here that could give rise to a breach of contract action for damages. In response to one of the questions, you said that it would be one thing if this were an action for specific performance, which it wasn't, and another if it's an action for damages. But even though it is an action for damages, the enforceability issue remains. If the issue is framed in terms of pure contract, pure negotiated agreement, the question is what consideration was given, or what detriment did either side occur? If it's expressed in terms of promissory estoppel, the question is what reliance, if any, what reasonable reliance did Mr. Harmon give on his side?
Well, he made himself available as the presiding judge to come back. I'm not sure. It's not promissory estoppel, as you know, isn't pure contract. And the Court of Chancery in Ramon versus Lang discusses that. It's not that the promise will be enforced. It's that
promise that leads the party trying to enforce the promise to rely detrimentally.
The promisee relies detrimentally,
right,
and should be compensated in some way.
And the question is, what was the reliance here? The same concept is expressed in different words if you're talking about an actual contract rather than equitable estoppel, and that is what was given up in exchange for the benefit.
His reliance was forbearance. It was delay in seeking employment, obtaining employment, and earning wages. And that was the court actually instructed the jury on damages in terms of expenses and losses related to the delay. It was 11 months. Had he known, or had he not been given that promise, he would have been out looking for a job from day one. And these jobs are hard to come by. I think there's 15 to 20 in the country. He sat in reliance because he knew he'd be acquitted, and he didn't seek other employment, and therefore he was...
I understand that as a conceptual matter, but was that reasonable when he is, as the Vice Chancellor pointed out, an at-will per diem employee. You know, we're not talking about, you know, waiting to see what the outcome of the criminal proceeding would be so that he could go back into a job where he had a locked-in.
That's correct, Your Honor, but in Lord versus Souder, it was an at-will employee, and the court found that detrimental reliance could apply. The teachers in Keating and Crisco, they had contracts, but they weren't automatically renewed. I think at some point you just have to look at the facts, and it was for the jury to resolve, did he reasonably rely, and they resolved that in his favor. Just touching briefly on apparent authority, if the court were not inclined to find actual authority, there's also ample evidence in the record to support that, and that's based on the administrator of Racing's role by statute. He's charged with carrying out the rules and orders of the commission. So it's fair for Mr. Harmon to assume if Mr. Wayne is saying this to me about my job, it must be the commission's decision.
I'd like to ask you again about the nodding of the heads and the yes. Is it your position that an actual official vote occurred? It's just that it wasn't recorded in the minutes?
According to Mr. Wayne's testimony, I would say the functional equivalent of a vote occurred, and certainly official action occurred by his testimony.
Well, what do you mean by function? It's either a vote or it's not, isn't it?
It wasn't all in favor, say aye. That wasn't the testimony. But he posed a question to them. They came to a resolution. They all looked at each other and said yes, and said, you can tell him that. That, to me, is them making a decision and telling their agent, you can convey that.
Does the record actually show that that Mr. Wayne was told, you can tell him, that is Mr. Harmon, that? Or was that just implicit?
Well, he said, there was a reason I had asked the question, meaning posing the question to the commission, because he had a conversation with Mr. Harmon who wanted to know about his job. I remember asking the question, if Don Harmon gets acquitted, does he get his job back?
A little louder and a little more slowly.
I'm sorry. I remember asking the question. I said, and he's talking to the commission, if Don Harmon is acquitted of all the charges, does he get his job back? And that was what he wanted to be assured of. So he's telling the commission Mr. Harmon wants to be assured of that, so they know what they tell him is going to go back to Mr. Harmon.
And does the record indicate anywhere that the members of the commission knew that they would be, in effect, making a binding contract on those terms?
Well, I said, what can I tell Mr. Harmon? And that was what they said, that if he was acquitted of all criminal charges, that he would get his job back. So if that was their statement, then not sure what was going through their minds, but I believe they did make a binding promise.
Well, on that basis, I guess the mistake that was made on the commission's part, you know, was in not saying, you know, you can tell them that, but we can't, you know, we're not bound by it without a vote.
That's correct. They could have said, well, it's our inclination, we'll have to see how it plays out, something like that. But that was the testimony, and that was enough for the jury to make the finding they did, and that's all we need to uphold the verdict.
What sets this apart from a case as in Conway, where the individual members of the commission may have said, indicated some assent, but there was never an official vote of the commission? Why shouldn't we look at that as simply actions by individuals who happen to be on the commission, but not a binding act of the commission?
Well, because there had to be a quorum there, an executive session, and he says they all look at each other and say yes. So that, under Section 10,006, is sufficient for official action. At least that's the...
All right, so your view is that 10,006 doesn't imply that there has to be an actual vote.
No, Your Honor. And yes, is it better for him to take a vote and put it in the minutes? Absolutely. But say there's some emergency situation on the track and three of them come out and say, here's what's going to be done. That's their action. That is their official action. They don't need to take a vote.
And your position is those facts support a jury finding of promissory estoppel being breached.
That's correct.
Or promissory estoppel, because we have a person who's not terminated, they're suspended. And the question is, if I'm acquitted, will I be reinstated? And the official action in response to that inquiry is yes. You can tell him he'll be reinstated.
Correct. And because of that, he doesn't seek other other employment.
I think that one of the main problem the trial judge had, you know, with the facts as they've been laid out, or the record that has been laid out, is that, you know, even if you accept that the commission, whether jointly or as individual members, told Mr. Wayne what they told him, that any, you know, and that Mr. Wayne relayed that message back to Mr. Herman, that it was any reliance on Mr. Herman's part wasn't reasonable, because Mr. Herman had been around long enough to know that there had to be an official vote, and there's no evidence that there was.
Your Honor, the testimony was, I believe, supports that Mr. Harmon's reliance was reasonable, because he said all my dealings through the commission went through John Wayne, and there was no testimony that he ever, that John Wayne ever showed him minutes or a vote. I think because of John Wayne's statutory authority to enforce the orders of the commission, Mr. Harmon was entitled to rely on his representations as being the orders of the commission. For all intents and purposes, Wayne was the commission in terms of relaying things about the job.
What is the significance of the testimony at trial that if plaintiff were found innocent, plaintiff would probably get his job back, or will consider him for the job?
That, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
That was Mr. Wayne who said that, right?
That was Mr. Wayne at one of his depositions, and he was cross-examined with that. So to the extent that conflicted with his testimony in court, that was for the jury to resolve.
Can you quickly tell me how reliance damages were presented to the jury and how they determined them?
Yes, Your Honor. Dr. Minahan, the economist, testified about Don Harmon's earnings, his cost of obtaining alternate health insurance, and his earnings were about $100,000 a year. And again, we're not seeking back wages, but the value of his earning capacity was testified to be about $8,300 a month. He had an 11-month loss of employment. Doing the calculations between that and COBRA, you come very close to the verdict that the jury got. So that was their evidence as to his wages, the cost of his health insurance, and some incidental expenses. But in a forbearance situation, he wasn't out there spending a lot of money. It was what he lost by virtue of his lost time. And the remainder of my time, if I could save for rebuttal, please.
Very well.
Thank you.
Counsel, if you'd bear with me, just quickly. It's not quite correct, is it, that Mr. Harmon always relied on Mr. Wayne? He actually hired counsel and appeared before the commission and sought a formal decision to reinstate him, correct? He didn't go to Mr. Wayne and say, gee, you should talk to the commission and get me reinstated. He understood that that was the procedure.
Your Honor, he did go for a hearing before the commission. I believe they set that up and he went. You know, he's going to accede to their demand to come in for a hearing or an appearance. I'm not sure what the testimony was or if he even got into what was in his head when he went to that, but he did. Yes.
But at any rate, he didn't go through Mr. Wayne to do that. He went directly
directly to the commission at that point, yes.
Right. I understand. Thank you.
Thank you.
And did he ask for a hearing or did the commission convene a hearing?
I believe the commission told his attorney there would be a hearing. Thank you.
May it please the court, Mark Nijelski on behalf of the State of Delaware Harness Racing Commission. I think the...
Mr. Nijelski, before you start, just while the question is still in our minds, can you clarify how Mr. Harmon got before the commission to have some kind of a hearing or review of the suspension decision and whether it was initiated by Mr. Harmon or Mr. Harmon's attorney or whether he went through Mr. Wayne or just how that happened?
It was Mr. Hurley, his attorney, requested the hearing for reinstatement.
And did he request it through Mr. Wayne or did he request it directly from the commission?
He requested it directly through the commission, Your Honor.
Thank you. I started interrupting.
And Your Honor, he did the same thing earlier when he was suspended without pay. He appeared before the commission with his attorney, Mr. Hurley, and Mr. Hurley, and made the application and made another motion that he be suspended with pay, that he be able to continue his salary, and that was denied. So all of his dealings with the commission was through his lawyer in this matter.
Did he or his lawyer ever request any indication from the commission as to whether he would be rehired should he be acquitted?
No. And
all this before the jury? Was the jury aware of all this background you're telling
me? Yes, Your Honor. And, Your Honor, the minutes are in evidence. They're Defense Exhibit 12. And
well, there are two different questions, and address them in any order you want. One is, should promissory estoppel be submitted to the jury? And if so, was there evidence to support it? And the Superior Court, after the verdict, said it should have never been submitted to the jury. Now, if the Superior Court was wrong on that, then the question becomes, was there evidence to support the jury verdict? So why don't you start with the legal proposition that it never should have been submitted to the jury?
Yes, Your Honor. The question should have been submitted to the jury simply because it's a legal question of whether a promissory estoppel should be used against an agency of the state, specifically where it involves the regulatory functions of that agency. So it never should have been, and of course that's the motion I made at trial at the close of the plaintiff's case.
Well, is regulatory different from hiring function?
Well, it can be, Your Honor, because if the hiring is merely is not a central part of the regulatory scheme, then that's a different question. In this particular agency or organization, he's being hired to be the judge to look at races. That is part of the regulation, to keep the races honest, keep the betting honest. So that is the regulation. That is the way the Harness Commission regulates races. It does it by its hiring the presiding judge, its other board of judges, by licensing various people at these racetracks. That's the way it's done.
But hiring is not a regulatory decision that gets posted in the Register of Regulations, is it?
That's correct, Your Honor, but you have to apply and there has to be, and the commission has to vote on the employment of these individuals. It has to vote on licensing matters and like that.
So would your answer be different if a clerical person had not been reinstated? Does this turn on the fact that he was a judge?
No, I think, Your Honor, I think it's a broader, the only thing I'm trying to take cognizance of is that there are cases from the state in which agencies like the school districts they've used promissory estoppel in those circumstances. Now, in a perfect world, I would argue it's never appropriate in the government for very significant reasons, and that is, unlike corporations, governments are supported by people we call taxpayers. And taxpayers don't choose and should only be required to pay taxes to spend money as those things are legislated by the General Assembly.
Well, is your position that even if this were or would have been a proper case for promissory estoppel, if the defendant had been a private person, it wasn't proper here. It wasn't appropriate here because the defendant was an agency of the government.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And could I interrupt a second, because I don't think we got the last question answered, which was from
lost track of it, Your Honor.
Justice Holland, would your answer be the same if the person involved in this hiring, suspension, and so on, was a secretary, a law clerk, a clerk, somebody who did filing?
No, Your Honor, would not be if it's a position which was done based on the vote of the commission and the commission had to vote on that position. My position would not be any different. Now, if the commission, for instance, had in a situation with Ed Quorum had passed a motion and authorized, let's say, Mr. Wayne to hire people, certain people, that I think is perfectly proper. That's proper.
But absent that motion, the commission basically hires and fires.
That's what the statute says, Your Honor.
Is that true even of clerical staff, or is it simply judges?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think that they have any clerical staff. I think that clerical staff is Department of Agriculture. So I think they actually work for the Ag Department.
Well, assuming that the promissory estoppel in these circumstances could be invoked against the state, the next issue would have been, is this a proper case to submit to a jury on the on a claim of promissory estoppel?
No, because first of all, the problem is that there were no damages. Mr. Harmon was given a very narrow instruction regarding what he could recover in damages, and he could not recover his back salary, anything like that. That was not in the instructions. All he's allowed to cover is the difference in delaying his job search. And he testified at trial twice that he had no damages. They were the same. So there's no damages.
Weren't there forbearance damages? Wasn't there testimony that he could have had another job during this period, but he forewent that opportunity because of the promise that he would be rehired? That's not lost wages from his job with the Delaware Harness Racing Commission. That's lost wages he would have received in another circumstance.
Yeah.
Were those precluded by the instructions to the jury?
I think they were, Your Honor.
Why would they be precluded? Under what
because
theory?
He voluntarily forbore them. He didn't
sure,
get that, the...
because he. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but he forwent those opportunities in reasonable reliance, in his view, on the promise. So I don't understand why those damages,
well,
as opposed to his salary that he didn't take, would not be measurable damages.
Well, that evidence was not submitted to the jury, Your Honor, as to what that loss would have been. It was his son. Talked about working for his son in a construction company.
Well, how did the trial court resolve that damages issue? Did the trial court address that particular issue of whether you're arguing there were no damages, no
yes,
reliance
Your Honor.
Damages?
Yes, Your Honor.
The jury said there were.
Yes, Your Honor.
How did the lower court rule on that
well, they,
issue if it was raised?
The alternative of the Rule 50 was to grant a new trial because the judge's damages instructions were not followed by the jury.
Well, you argued for, you moved for a new trial?
Yeah, as an alternative, under Rule 50, Your Honor, you can ask for judgment as a matter of law, and as an alternative, you always ask for a new trial. And under the present rule, Rule 50, the judge has to make a ruling on that, no matter how they decide the Rule 50 matter. Now, the Rule 50 does allow the trial court to submit it to the jury, thinking maybe the jury will do the right thing and I'll have to do anything. So that's not inappropriate for the trial judge to submit it to the jury. He's allowed to do that.
All I'm asking, without getting involved in the nuances of procedure, is whether the trial court addressed the argument that you're making now that there were no damages.
Well, I think they did, Your Honor, in the fact that they said in the alternative they would grant a new trial.
Counsel, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Do we have anything to review as far as that particular argument is concerned?
Let me see, Your Honor. Well, Your Honor, page 16 of the trial court's decision of November 17, 2011, he talks about the aspect of reliance damages and how what that limitation was. And that the plaintiff's expert provided testimony as to lost wages, but not as to reliance damages.
And did the court draw any conclusion from that?
Yes, that it's against the great weight of the evidence and it shocks the conscience of the court.
Counsel, assuming we get by the issue of whether a promissory estoppel is appropriate against an agency of the state, we're going to need to resolve the question of whether there was an action by the commission that gave actual authority to convey the promise. The best evidence, as stated in the earlier part of the argument, for the plaintiff's position is that Mr. Wayne posed the question, and a number of the commissioners either nodded or said yes. Is that an official action by the commission? And if it's not, why is it not?
Because an official action of the commission requires them to do something, to make a decision. And they seems to indicate part of the thing they have to do is have a quorum. But it's to decide things, and they do that by voting, just like this court does.
And what triggers an official vote? How do we separate an official vote from an assent from all of the members of the commission?
If you read the minutes at Defense Exhibit 12, you'll see that somebody calls a motion, somebody seconds the motion, and they vote. And you'll note in the minutes they vote on everything.
And in your view, that's required to bind the commission?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, Your Honor.
But couldn't the, you know, the nodding of the heads, an affirmation coupled with, you know, a communication to Mr. Wayne as to what he could tell Mr. Herman be reasonably construed as the equivalent, the legal equivalent of a formal vote, even though it didn't follow the, you know, all of the bells and whistles that might normally occur?
Your Honor, if that were true, then I would have promissory estoppel claim against this court. On other occasions, in other cases, I thought I did a good job. I got good nods and ascensions, but they come out against you because it's not that's not their vote. The fact that they're receptive.
The question is, what's Mr. Wayne going to do when he leaves the room? And the commissioners are there in executive session, and Mr. Wayne says, what am I going to tell Mr. Herman? And the answer is yes. He will be reinstated, and everyone knows that Mr. Wayne is the spokesman for the commission, and he's going to leave the room and tell that to Mr. Herman. For purposes of promissory estoppel, why is that not enough if the jury believes it?
Because Mr. Herman knows better. Mr. Herman is an insider. He was first employed by vote of the Harness Racing Commission. He's attended Harness Racing Commission meetings.
The fact that he's an insider would, if anything, assist in his position, again, if the facts were believed in his favor, which is that he goes to John Wayne, right, and says, what's the story here? Will the commission rehire me if I or reinstate me? And Wayne says, well, I'm going to go into executive session with the commission and find out. So to the extent that Herman is knowledgeable that the commission has to do something in order for it to be a valid act, didn't that process, at least in executive session, appear to have been achieved?
No, Your Honor. And the reason why is Mr. Herman, back in January 2004, when he was suspended without pay, he appeared before the commission in executive session with his attorney.
Well, they voted. We're talking about, I think, different things. We all agree that the record reflects Mr. Herman appeared before the commission. And we all agree there are certain things where the commission has to take a formal vote. The question here is, if instead of going to the commission, Mr. Herman says to Mr. Wayne, who's the commission's spokesman, please find out what's going to happen if I'm acquitted. And Mr. Wayne says, I'll find out from them in executive session. And he comes back from executive session and says, yes, you'll be reinstated. For purposes of promissory estoppel, why isn't that enough?
Because there has not been official action by the commission that would give Mr. Wayne the authority to bind the commission.
So they can only say yes one way. And if the jury believes the commission said yes, you're saying, well, as a matter of law, that yes did not count.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And therefore, we go back to the question, was there sufficient evidence for the jury to conclude that yes did count? And now, and so there's, I think we've blended two questions here. One is whether promissory estoppel should have ever been submitted to the jury in the first place. And if we assume hypothetically it was properly submitted, then the question becomes, if the commission said yes in the manner that we've been discussing, is that something the jury could have reasonably relied on?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because the statute makes it very clear how the commission is supposed to operate. And it's not supposed to operate with nods and people looking at you and not saying anything.
The statute makes that clear?
Well,
simply requiring a quorum?
Well, Your Honor, if you read the minutes.
It requires a vote, doesn't it?
Yes, Your Honor. I think it does require a vote.
It doesn't dictate what form that vote should take.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So it could be a voice vote. You know, it could be a nodding of the head. I mean, it could take any number of forms.
Well, the evidence at trial is that's not the way that the commission conducts business.
Does the statute explicitly require a vote, or does it simply require a quorum?
It requires a quorum for action. But the implication of that is there's a quorum so you can vote.
What could the commission reasonably expect Mr. Wayne and Mr. Harmon to believe, where the question was posed to them in executive session, will Mr. Harmon get his job back if he's acquitted? They nod as a group or voice assent, and then Mr. Wayne is told to communicate that to Mr. Harmon. What could they reasonably expect Mr. Harmon to believe other than that he was going to get his job back if he was acquitted?
They might have been, I don't know, Your Honor, because I don't think it occurred. But
But let's assume it occurred, because there's sufficient evidence, is there not, for a jury to conclude it occurred.
Your Honor, I guess the theory is then, yes, you can ask us for reinstatement later on. You can ask us to be reinstated if you're acquitted.
So the statement, yes, you will be reinstated, is the equivalent of you may ask us for reinstatement.
Yes, because in fact, that's actually what happened. His lawyer asked for reinstatement.
Afterwards?
After he was acquitted. And Your Honor, by the way, Mr. Hurley didn't mention anything about this promise. And Mr. Hurley would have mentioned something about the promise if he knew about such a thing. He didn't mention it.
Well, if he did, I would just say if he didn't, perhaps it's because his client didn't tell him.
Well, if the client was going to rely on something, you think at the very least his client would tell his lawyer something as important as that.
Do you have anything else?
No, Your Honor, I do not.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
I just have a few minutes, so let me just touch on a few things that came up. Section 1006, the quorum requirement, does not use the term vote. It says a quorum for official action. We submit there was evidence that took place here. The state's argument almost boils down to an argument that the commission or government body could never act through an agent, because the recipient of the communication would have to say, show me the minutes or show me proof that this action actually took place. And I think that's an unreasonable interpretation. And I think each government action has to be looked at on a case-by-case basis. No, the ABCC can't say you can sell to minors. That's ridiculous. But in this case, the person that the commission has set you up to deal with in your suspension says, I'm going to go ask them, here's what they said. Is that reasonable? We submit it is, and the jury found it is.
Can I ask you about this reliance damages issue, because I'm a little bit confused. You are not, your client is not seeking lost wages from the Harness Racing Commission, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And the jury was given evidence of what his lost compensation was from other jobs that he could have had?
No, not specifically. It was given information of his earnings over the past few years, but that was to show his earning capacity, because prospectively, he could have had an equivalent job, and that's what he's capable of earning. He has an 11-month delay. So whenever he gets his new job, there's an 11-month lag time that he couldn't start it because of the reliance. So maybe the dollar amounts might come out equivalent, but it's not the same as lost wages. It's lost time.
Okay, and the job that he would have had was with his brother? Is that the record?
That was one with his son, I believe. He testified that I wasn't really seeking jobs, but I got some offers to work as a horse trainer for some people, but you can't be a racing official and a horse trainer at the same time, and he was still officially a racing official. His son, I believe, was in a construction business, but he said, you know, I didn't want to do that because I knew I was going back to the commission.
What I'm trying to get to is a person entitled to reliance damages when the person says, well, I'm not going to do anything during this interim period. I'm not going to try to earn any money at all, because I expect to be reinstated. Why isn't there some duty to mitigate in terms of, even if it was construction work he was going to do and he wouldn't even earn as much as he would, but that he wouldn't just sit there for 11 months doing nothing waiting to be reinstated?
Your Honor, my time is up, but I'll answer your question. The jury, I don't believe the jury was instructed on mitigation. I think given his industry, I'm going to go be a racing official, and the only alternative is in another state. He testified they need the kind of commitment, time commitment from him that he could not give because he knew he was going to back to work in Delaware because of the promise. Could there have been other mitigation potentially? But again, to the extent that was charged or presented, it was for the jury to resolve. And the jury verdict was relatively small.
Thank you both for your arguments.
Thank you.
The court will take this matter under advisement, and we'll also take a brief recess.